just, stable, and sustainable world for all life. It's the future that 2020 reminded us we really need. While it can be hard to imagine the huge shifts it'll take to get there, one thing remains certain: how essential we are to each other. People to people, people to nature, nature to everything.
What Are You Doing Here? Is a podcast by the Emerging World Project, where voices for and about our Earth and all of her inhabitants come to you with stories from across the globe. Stories that remind us that we can achieve incredible things, but it starts with each of us acknowledging that we are part of something greater than ourselves. I am your host, Addison Brown.
And I am your co-host, Marley Alabanza.
People to people, people to nature, nature to everything.
Indeed, these connections are the bedrock of our existence. When nature thrives, people thrive. But even when we acknowledge this truth on a planetary scale, it's easy to lose sight of what that means to individual communities and individual people. People and nature find ways to thrive together. Let's not forget what that looks like.
Most of the world no longer needs to seek food. It comes to us in extraordinary, complex, and sophisticated food systems that have created unparalleled abundance. However, today's food system has become the single greatest cause of global warming, soil loss, chemical poisoning, chronic disease, rainforest destruction, and dying oceans. Because people love to eat and taste, the food system, for all its myriad ills and assaults, offers an extraordinary opportunity to regenerate soil, climate, community, cultures, and human health. It is the keystone solution because it either upholds or degrades every aspect of human endeavor. This connection between soil, climate, and planetary well-being has become clearly evident to community groups, indigenous nations, farmers big and small, chefs, activists, nutritionists, restaurants, and NGOs worldwide, all of whom are working to reclaim the integrity and nutrition of authentic food and to create a new food system designed to support life on Earth. Our guest today is vegan activist David.
David Pereira is a former federal food inspector. He has worked in the animal agriculture industry for 15 years and has witnessed many horrible things during his time as an inspector. After some self-reflection and learning that we don't need to eat cows, chickens, or fish to live, he became vegan. David has helped to create and organize many campaigns, working with many other activists, with the goal of recruitment in mind. He enjoys street outreach and speaking to the public directly. You can find his Engage platform on YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, and Instagram. David's work is focused on helping to build a better world for the most vulnerable. Please join us and welcome our guest today, David.
Hello, David.
How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. I'm really looking forward to this conversation because it's a little bit, I don't know what the right word is I want to use, but it's just a little bit outside of the direction that the Emerging World Project has been going in with this podcast in particular. Meaning, this work is hugely important and very much on our radar and very much a topic of conversation. But we just haven't had the conversation. So when I discovered you, I was like, guys, we're going to do this, guys and gals. We're going to do this. And, you know, we don't have to be PETA. They can be PETA. And we can do this in the way that we find maybe heard, right? So these conversations can be heard differently when presented differently. You might have noticed that by the direction of the questions in which we're going to delve into, but that really has been our aim. And so I'm just really happy about the work that you do and grateful and appreciative. And let's get into it. What do you say?
Yeah, that's great. And I really appreciate everything you guys are doing, and I'm definitely ready to get going. And if there's anything I'm kind of falling off, sometimes I need to get brought back into the conversation because, I'll use an excuse as I have flashbacks sometimes, but sometimes it's just me being me.
Your direct experience, I think, is the most powerful way in which we can learn from others is by hearing this. The work in animal activism seems to stem from what I feel is this innate understanding to our interconnectedness to the more than human world. So can you share with us when you first noticed your connection?
That's a great question, Addison. And I just wanted to preface this by saying thank you so much for having me on. I took a look into your bio, and it's incredible all the work that you've done. And, you know, it's really wonderful to be meeting people that do want to make a difference in this world and make a change for the better. And, I just wanted to say I appreciate everything you're doing in trying to make the world a better place.
Thank you.
And I really like the question, because it kind of delves in a bit deeper than a lot of people think. I really actually think it starts at a young age when we have this interconnectedness with the world. We're brought up and, you know, we look at the world with just like this, it's hard to say, but just this with this honest opinion of everything. It's genuine to us. It's new to us. And so I feel like, you know, we look at animals and we look at other people as friends initially until, you know, maybe we grow up a little bit and we're told that we're eating our friends. And so part of what I think starts discrimination or speciesism is the fact that we're told we're eating our friends. And anytime I've mentioned this to younger folks, they've had this reaction, you know, if we show footage or if we talk about the animal agriculture industry as a whole, you know, a lot of people have that first inkling to say what's going on. And so I think it all starts from our plate. I really do. I think a lot of the isms, speciesism, discrimination, stem from our belief that we're here together with these beings, and then moving to we're eating these beings, our friends. You know, we start to look at people differently maybe at that point. You know, we start to look at the world a lot differently. We become skeptical of believing our own intuition. And so I think that's sort of what I think resonates with a lot of people at a young age, and I think for myself included. I don't have a particular time, but when I started to work near the end of my career working in the animal agriculture industry, I started to notice that my intuition was like permeating. It was coming outside, and it was a helpless feeling because I wanted to have it all stop, and it wasn't. In a sense, there wasn't much I could do about it other than, you know, shut off and kind of bury it at that point until I knew that I could not be a part of it.
Yeah. So I do hear this, and I understand that we don't have a very clear, story of when we recognized it, which I love because it isn't a very clear story of our recognition. It's sort of an accumulation of events and but I wonder if there is this brings me as we start to talk about your journey, if there is a sense of a calling, and if there is a calling, what does that feel like to you?
Yeah, that's a great question. I often think of how I ended up where I am today, and sort of I sometimes look at it as why I was put into the situation I was. Obviously, mm-hmm. a lot of choices were made, but I also felt too that I had to somehow have everything figured out at a young age. I think the world tends to place expectations on young individuals to have them have things figured out. So, I think it was just somehow for some strange reason, I believe I was just meant to work where I did, experience what I did, see what I did. So that way I could help others understand what happens in their food system, to help others understand what's happening from, you know, a point of view that sort of would be protecting the public from, you know, say disease or, you know, welfare issues happening. And so I think it brings a unique perspective to that. And I think a lot of people would more or less resonate with people that maybe we're in a position of authority and have changed because of the things that they witnessed. So I do feel like it's some sort of a calling for me. And it's hard to put a pinpoint on how it's supposed to be, but you know, if I can help others relate and see that it's possible to make change, you know, coming from a background of where I did, then I think I'm hopeful that that will inspire others to create the world that we ought live in, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, indeed. So you come from a couple of generations of slaughterhouse inspectors, and I've heard you say that you greatly, or rather I've read that you greatly look up to your grandfather's journey and thus followed in those same footsteps. What was your immediate thought process for going to do the work in the first place?
Yeah, so I think it was, back to previous question, I think at some point you're at an age where you have these expectations that you need to have some things figured out, you know, what you're going to do for a living, how that's going to progress your life. And I think we all have some expectations from our family at some point. But, you know, I don't like to play a victim card here. I did seek this job and I thought it would be an opportunity as well. And I definitely, I looked up to my grandparents. You know, they lived the quasi-Canadian-American dream. Moved from a different country, immigrated, you know, faced some of the things that foreigners would face moving to a new country. And, you know, rather than like taking it to heart, I guess, or you know, not progressing in the world, they decided that they were going to make the world they want in this country. And so I guess, and I think that's the first time I'm actually saying that and realizing that, you know, they had some challenges where they lived before. And I think, you know, it takes incredible strength to try to make a better world for your, you know, your offspring, your family. And so I think that came in line with their work ethic and how I was treated as a young kid living there pretty much all the time I was there. They took care of me well. And so, I guess it was rather more or less that I thought I had to have some things figured out. Mm-hmm. And I think it's quite a common theme for a lot of people, around right. the age of 20 to 20, whatever, that they jump into jobs that they think they need to do and have it all figured out at a certain point.
Right. And sometimes it feels like making those decisions. I mean, of course, we make incorrect decisions, which leads us, I feel like, we step into a better understanding of the world that in which we have the power to create. But this sort of pre-doing that is more of an impulse, a survival impulse, without a greater consideration to all the other parts of the puzzle, right? Yeah. It's a survival space for us as an individual. We look at just our immediate family and maybe some people in our community, and then we make decisions based on that. And this feels like an era where that, I'm going to use the word awakening, is happening, right? Like we have to awaken to that. It saddens me that we've made, as a species, we've made so many mistakes, and the overwhelming feeling of those mistakes and wanting to move past them. I want to ask you about what you witnessed, but I don't want you to go somewhere that you don't want to go again. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's totally fair.
Okay. Because I think, again, firsthand experience for people to hear what you witnessed. And if that was an accumulation that caused the change, I'll let you go with that.
Yeah. And I often sort of struggle to answer these types of questions because I know the audience perhaps sometimes may be hearing this for the first time. And it could be very shocking and hurtful to know that you know, you could be a part of something that you never thought you were a part of, and you sometimes might feel duped, or you might feel ashamed, or lots of other feelings, emotions might come to play. So when I go into discussing these things, I guess I try to take analogies or you know, bring together some sort of a story to try to help other people make that connection, because mm-hmm. I do feel it's important that people hear these stories. And to be honest, if I could imprint, some of these emotions on people, perhaps that could inspire change. So I guess when looking back, I tend to go to different spots when I started working there. A number of different things flash back to me. So if you can imagine seeing something so awful, like if you look back in the categories or the catalog of memories that you have, and if there's a time where you witness something where your heart is racing, or you're you get anxious, or you just can't believe it's happening. So you just have all these mixed emotions, and you're scared, and all these things were happening as I was coming into like the facility to actually witness exactly what I had had for the first time. And so, like, if you can imagine like the start of a roller coaster falling down, and feeling that fear, and you're just trying to hold it together, and you don't want to disappoint, because you know there was a lot of effort taken to get you that job, and you also come in a position where you're paid by the public to be there for them. So to jump into this fear or allow that to overtake you, perhaps you might miss something. When I was coming into this place, I just remember going into this change room area where the smell was, unbelievable. If you can imagine driving out in the farm fields and you smell that smell. Just imagine that times, maybe 1,000. It's permeating actually into your skin, and it stays with you even as you drive home at night. And so I remember just walking down to this bay area where there's this big transport truck, and I could barely see because there's so many feathers and dust in the air. And no matter where you touched, your hand was going to be touching feces because it was everywhere. And so, like, you see, these big, strong men throwing these crates down, and you see these birds shaking and rattling in these crates, and you kind of look in their eyes. And I think that's the moment where you realize this is real, and this is what I'm doing. And I guess the only way you could do is observe it and not allow those emotions to take you over, because I don't care who you are. Anybody who would see such a thing would definitely, especially in the beginning, would completely break down. And I think the more you do it, obviously, the more you shut your emotions off. And I think that's what happened with me. And I think that's what happens with people in general. They think they're doing it for a reason,
Did you ever have the opportunity to have a conversation with the gentlemen that were handling the crates or any of the people with inside?
Yeah, so that's was one of my jobs, actually, was to ensure the welfare of the animals was being taken into consideration by the employees, and I was there to govern it. So there were definitely many conversations that took place. However, when you would bring these issues up to, management or other inspectors, I guess they didn't see much of a problem with it, because the line speeds are so fast, and they're trying to keep up with times and quotas and stuff like that. The animals somehow lose their value in life. They're looked at as a commodity, and so. I've seen a number of things. I've seen these animals being thrown. I've seen, trucks run over them. I've seen a lot of really awful things. In 15 years, I went to court just twice after documenting hundreds of these types of issues. And so I didn't see any progress in that. And it's just it's an awful thing when you see these things happening and you don't have the support to try to mitigate it, because that was my mindset then. Obviously, my mindset's changed since then.
Right. So when you decided to leave that job, was there a pivotal conversation that you had with your family and friends based on your change of heart, change of mind?
Yeah. So for a number of years there, especially near the end, I really shut off. So although I do have a lot of friends and family, especially around that time, I sort of disconnected with a lot of people. So, and two, I had a bit of fear. It's a good, great question, because I don't know that I've actually discussed that. I had a bit of fear, what sort of backlash I would get, leaving this. My grandfather helped me get the job. He still had friends in the agency, and the disappointment maybe from the rest of my family. And, this is a government job, you have a pension, you have all these factors coming into play. And so innately, I just intuitively knew I need to leave the job. And I guess when I would have those conversations, I don't know that I was completely genuine with them. I think I would just say that I'm looking at a different career path or something like that, as opposed to telling them exactly what happened, because I don't know if I could put that on somebody else. And I still struggle with sharing that type of stuff today, as I've awoken to, you know, this idea that sharing these things is helpful.
Mm-hmm. Do you... it's like a hard conversation, because I can feel you and I feel it. I feel it so deeply. And I want these conversations, and I want to have these conversations, and I want your healing, because I think your healing is my healing. And that healing then translates to the healing of our world, which is in desperate need of it. So in a way, I feel I want you to have somebody to listen to you, deeply listen to you. And that interconnectedness will then be understood. So in that vein, what do you feel is the most effective way to get us humans to reconsider our values when it comes to making these kinds of choices to harm or consume animals?
Yeah, it's, I think, a question that a lot of us ponder sometimes more than once a day. You know, what can we do to effectively make the change that we want to see in our world that would bring all earthlings into a harmonious state of consciousness? And so I often think of these things and strategize. I'm an organizer of some events here where I live, and you know, we're always trying to reinvent how we do our activism. So I don't know that there's a one size fits all solution, but like I'll give you a couple examples. So a friend of mine, you know, they picked up a leaflet at some market in Florida, and nobody told them to take it. They just saw it there. They picked it up off the table, and it had some information in there to watch a movie called Dominion. And it showcases the animal agriculture industry's standard industry practices. And so after watching it that night, they became vegan, and they've been an advocate ever since. So that's, you know, just one example of where, you know, someone saw that. For me personally, you know, I found street outreach to be the most effective for me. And obviously sharing my experiences with others through podcasts and interviews and such. I think also like speeches. I know that there's motivational speeches that help in every field, but I've seen a few, especially in the animal rights, just to help people bring that connection to, you know, our relationship with other animals, other beings, and so, and how we can all live in a state together. So I think that those are a few things that do help move us into a better way moving forward.
Now, since you've become a vegan, there's always two topics within that. Well, there's a few, but health, I always get, you know, questions about the health, how healthy it is, and then ethics, which to me is the bigger question. So of those two, what have been most powerful for you?
Well, I would say that, so when we're looking at veganism, and I'm sure you agree. So when we look at the core values, like the philosophy of veganism, and we see it as an injustice, you know, what's happening to, you know, these earthlings. And so we often look to like health and an environment as some sort of a motivator, but to me that then becomes about ourselves and not necessarily the individual suffering going through this every day. And so that sort of is the way I like to frame it and look at it, as there's a victim involved, and those are should be the primary motivators, because as selfish humans, sometimes we take other issues and look at it how it's going to benefit us, as opposed to benefiting others and humanity. But I would say, I have, with the health side of things, seen, an impact in my life. I know that, as far as exercise and eating and having a clear head, I've never felt that in my entire life ever since I've gone vegan. Now, I know that can be anecdotal, and I think it's more of a motivator or a decision for people when it comes to food choices, whether they want to be active or healthy or eating right. But I think all the science has shown that we can definitely thrive if we want on a vegan diet.
When I think about the American diet and the American plate that has been put forth, and I'm going to say after World War II, that plate included, protein, carb, veg, right? With protein being the biggest one. And as we discover more and more, that has nothing to do with it at all. That was a post-war, I want to say propaganda in a way. But it's hard for people to let that go or even look into it more deeply, right? Like they're insistent upon this protein element that must be there without understanding the variety of proteins that will come through other things, plants, beans, things, grains, things like that. I want to talk to you about if you have any conversations with hunters, and how would you approach a conversation when it comes to the culture of hunting?
Yeah, that's a great question, and interesting, because I was actually watching a live debate on hunting yesterday. And so, I think the thing is, if anyone's listening right now, I don't necessarily see that hunter or that person who's living off the land, listening to a podcast or, living in the community or just, having the access that most people do. And so when we look at culture and tradition, of course, over history, we can see that we've had many cultural practices that can be brutal often. And so throughout human history, we've tried, or it looks like movements have tried, to move away from these types of things. And although I understand that there are situations where it's just not possible to not use animals for their skin or their secretions or for food, I think the vast majority of people do have the opportunity to shy away from that, whether it's cultural or not. And a way I look at it too is, and oftentimes, and I don't mean to get into too much of religion here, but the question I will ask, is it a prerequisite to kill an animal to, say, get into heaven? So I don't know that it's a prerequisite in these cultures to kill animals to eat them as well. I think oftentimes that comes down to choice. Mm-hmm. And then the question then becomes, does our choice equate to, say, taste pleasure or something like that when we have alternatives?
You are listening to our conversation with David. David is a former slaughterhouse inspector turned vegan activist. Please don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
pores, the pull of remembering back to the center of time, back to the center, over and through and back by way of the middle again. Spiritual pathways, a promise delivered, a navel formed by the crisscrossing lines tracing the adventures, the joys, the frights, highlighting the heart, emphasizing the soul, memorializing the memory itself, tracing the adventures, the joys, the frights, the hopes, the fears, the lines of the stars, passages, ribbons, spiritual pathways, land constellations, a promise delivered, ribbons, ribbons becoming bows, markings of sacred journeys traced over and over and over again. Corridors. Our way of stitching back together that which in our utterly confused clumsiness we have torn all the way apart. Overstitch, understitch, cross-stitch, backstitch. A way to repair, to apologize, to do over. To extend our young hand in remorse, backstitch, overstitch, understitch, cross-stitch. A heartfelt, prayerful way to repair, a hopeful way to repair, of threading back together, of coming back together, of stitching back together that which we realize has always been meant to live as one. Carnivores, paradoxical kin, the ones who with a single leap take the lives of those so very close to us in order to feed themselves, in order to feed their young. And also the guardians of life, guardians of life all around us, of our kin who eat plants, of the plant kin themselves, and even of the rich and fertile soil which births them. Keepers of balance, teachers of elegance. Puma, jaguar, panther, imposing reflections of our very own power, inviting us to retract, to fully retract our arms, to tread with the lightest of toes, keeping silence, holding reverence. A caress for the land with each step, a caress for the land with each purr. Puma, jaguar, panther, imposing reflections of our very own power, inviting us to know the fullness of our most unabashed roar. When it's time to be known, when it's time to be present, when it's time to offer nothing but our most preciously primal protection.
The Emerging World Project Studios recognizes that we occupy land in Los Angeles County originally and still inhabited and cared for by the Tongva, Tataviam, Serrano, Quiche, and Chumash peoples. We honor and pay respect to their elders and descendants, past, present, and emerging, as they continue their stewardship of the lands and waters in Los Angeles County.
I often sit in conversations and with well-intentioned folks, let's say we're on the subject of oceanography and ways in which we can protect in our ocean. That is our intention in a group think. And in more often than not, in these conversations, somebody will get hijacked by their trauma. They'll get hijacked by their trauma of something completely unrelated to that which we're trying to bring in new ideas or innovation. Let's say all of a sudden it becomes about race, or all of a sudden it becomes about ethics, because that person has been hijacked by their trauma, an undigested trauma, and then the conversation is over. And I feel like as individuals that undigested trauma, that the only way to move past that is to make sure that we've digested our trauma and then move into those spaces to try and have a conversation that becomes a global centered consciousness, right? So any culture, it's not any culture, it's a global culture. And I feel like that's one of the ways, hopefully, that we will actually move forward or emerge. I don't know.
Yeah, that's wonderful. I'm reading a book now that really talks about that. Looking inside, creating yourself and creating the best version of yourself. Mm-hmm. And so I think we often forget that people aren't in the same, on the same level as us, as far as, you know, a lot of different things. And so I think we need to sometimes push the brakes and realize that we're in this together, like we would be helping a friend or a family member, and helping someone who's just not to that realization. Now, sometimes that's easier said than done with animal rights, because emotions do get involved. And I'm guilty of it myself, where I've gotten too emotional and maybe said some things that I shouldn't have. But it's very good to reflect back and remember the end goal. It's not about our ego. It's not about us. Right. It's about everyone. And I think that's an important distinction that people often forget, you know, in their day to day. But it's great to slow down and reflect.
Most definitely. Most definitely. It's brings me to my next question about the complicatedness and complexity of activism, right? But it's complicated and complex because of our own personal trauma and inability to be aware of it before it hijacks our thought process. So what would you say to a young person looking to get involved in animal agriculture activism? I speak with a lot of young people and they have remarkable insight. It seems, I'm noticing, as if they've been born hooked up to it, in a sense, because I might ask them, like, why? And it was like, it's always been this way. I would never eat an animal, right? So hard, you know, they come in all wired up. And then there's others that, of course, do not, or I don't have that kind of response. So I guess for somebody like yourself that has gone through this from one end to the other, what would you say to young people looking to get involved?
Yeah, that's great, Addison. I mean, I've seen it myself. It's undeniable, really, that it seems this generation is just so much more inviting, and they're not shy on their beliefs and how they see things. Mm-hmm. It's as if they were born sometimes without an ego. Mm-hmm. And so it's great. Yeah. I reflect back to an event that we recently did at a university. And so we had some cookies, and it was watch a scary movie, have mm-hmm. a cookie. And so it was obviously of the animal agriculture industry, and it was a VR headset. So they were really entranced and engaged with what happens. And so afterwards, we interviewed them, and I think all but one, you know, were really impacted. And they said, it's not right what we're doing. This isn't cool. This is not fair. We shouldn't be doing this. And so it was just really so impactful to see, and to see that they were just so open. It's so refreshing, and it gives you, sense of calm, knowing that, we have these people that are going to change the world, and they're going to maybe be the generation that flips it on its head. And so I guess what I would say to, and I have said it, and some of the events, I asked them, like, do they want to shape the world they live in? And oftentimes, people are looking for a purpose in life. They're they're not necessarily given some of these purposes. And what better purpose could there be than to, elevating humanity and having earthlings all live in harmony? So I'd also say, like, I'm not experienced at any of this. This is all still learning for me. And if I'm able to go out and speak and learn things like confidence and learn how to speak to people out in the streets, I think it's possible for anyone. And so, the main thing for me is, and I always point it out, it's really not that difficult when you look at it from a different perspective, from, say, a victim's perspective or somebody else's. Mm-hmm. I find that gives me more of a ability to speak to people with passion, because then it isn't about me, it's just about others. So,
yeah. I've been thinking a lot about how it is we flip ourselves to see the perspective of the other, right? I know that we've created a tremendous amount of distance in our ability to do that, but there must be an avenue at which we can teach how to flip that. And do that, because it's not easy. It's not easy to get out of self. And I'm not even certain that it's about getting out of self, but it's definitely closing down some element of, the solidity of yourself and looking from the other. I mean, maybe we just don't, well, most people just maybe don't even want to look. So you hold up a picture of a pig with the sign, and I'm crying, and I get it. But, someone says, oh, that's going to be good dinner or something. Like, that shut off is so, I don't understand.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? It's interesting where the human mind goes. It's almost as if it goes to like a childlike state where, like, no, I'm not going to listen to anything that you say, a tantrum. Like, so we call that like cognitive dissonance. Mm-hmm. And, I think we all have it probably entrenched in us. I agree. It's hard for people just to step outside of their, comfortable circle, comfortable way of life. I've been fairly lucky to be surrounded by so many open-minded people and people that consistently push my boundaries. But when you're not in that, I can see where it might be a challenge. And these are some of the things we actually talk about when we're looking at creating events or gaining membership to do these things. Is how do we make people feel comfortable? How do we engage them and make them feel part of the community?
Yeah, that community is really, I was going to ask you about that, but I think earlier you talked about the ways in which, you know, this type of activism builds community and educates.
Yeah.
And about that.
Right. And for me personally, like I have a wild card because of where I work. So I don't often bring it into a conversation until I hear someone say this can be done ethically. And then I can say, well, you know, to be honest, I don't think it can be. And even if it was some sort of utopia where it could be done perfectly, I don't think it's right. I don't think many would agree that it's right to take someone's life, you know, just for something as simple as a sensory pleasure. But I would also say, like, you know, respecting people and their boundaries and, you know, trying not to argue, but I do still believe in some sort of mirroring people where they're at. I think that that gives us some sort of sense of comfort as well. But yeah, I don't know. I look forward to seeing what's going to happen, you know, when some of these things are starting to really change. And I have a sense that it's already starting to do that.
Yes, yes. I sense it every day, because the people I speak with is a mixture. There are those in my echo chamber, and then there are just those that, because I want to be able to have the conversation. But I am beginning to notice not only in the products that are coming out, but in the willingness for people to take it on, even if they don't know. Like, I'm not really, I know there's a transition period. I understand that, but I never ate animals, so it's not something that I have to transition to doing. But I understand those that ate burgers and now have the option to eat plant-based burgers. So I understand that, and I'm happy to see that I'm in Los Angeles, which is a very restaurant food oriented space. And I'm happy to see so many restaurants having those options, and then full on restaurants, full on Italian restaurants having those options, which I also love, because I think about this Italian restaurant and the chef there who's, you know, considers herself very, well, not considers, she is Italian with Italian traditions, but is willing to take all of those traditions and turn them into plant-based everything. And that to me is a huge, wonderful step. Huge, wonderful step, because there's no holding on to, well, you know, we eat rabbit, that's what we do, right? Or we eat cows, that's what we do. It's part of our tradition. You know, it's Christmas, we have to have, you know. That's, yeah, I'm with you. I'm seeing it, and I think it's happening, and that brings me joy. And meeting people like you brings me tremendous joy and hope and inspiration. So I want to just thank you from the deepest sense of my being for the work that you're doing, the time and the energy and the love and concern that you're putting for humanity and the more than human world out into the world. I'm your biggest fan.
Oh, Allison, thank you. That's so much to take in. I really appreciate it. And
absolutely.
Like, I wouldn't be able to have these channels to be able to try to push out a message of compassion if it weren't for people like you and all the work you've done, and knowing that it's possible that you can do these things and multiple projects, multiple avenues of change. It's great to see that it's possible. So I really appreciate everything you do as well.
Absolutely. So my last question is just sort of for fun. If you had a billboard for all the world to see, what would it say and why?
Oh, wow. That's a great question. It's like a put on the spot question, you know.
Wait, didn't you get my email? No, I'm kidding.
Yeah. Yeah, honestly, it's something you could ponder for days on this question. And like you could do the traditional, and I guess maybe I was thinking more on lines of, you know, maybe putting a slaughterhouse worker up there with a knife in hand and blood and say, you know, there's more victims that than you know have or know of. Or, you know, you could just put a cute picture of a pig up there and that's it, you know, just a canvas of a cute pig up there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And just show people how, you know, beautiful these beings can be.
Yeah. Delightful. Absolutely delightful. David, thank you again. We're going to wrap this up. It's been beautiful speaking with you. I want to give you the space to say anything, if I've missed anything that you would like to share at this time.
Yeah, no, that's a wonderful, Addison. I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down with me today. And yeah, I don't really have much more to say other than, you know, if I can make just a little bit of change, I'm sure a lot of people out there can make a big change. And to be honest, it's really not a lot to be a little bit active, you know, reach out to maybe an MP if you're, you know, seeing something that's not right, that you're not in for. Like we can collectively make change. So a member of parliament or a city official, or even just out in the street, if you give out stickers or food or, you know, all these forms of, you know, if the intent is right, can create that impact, that change we want. And, I challenge anybody to get out there and, you know, put the pause on the Netflix for a night and make something happen.
Beautiful. Well, we will make sure to include all of the information. You have some wonderful information on your YouTube space, all of your spaces. So we will make sure that we bring people to your space to give them the information they need and the inspiration.
Yeah, that's great. And if you want to support my work, I do have a Patreon. So I'm actually trying to look to do this at a part-time, even full-time capacity, which I do already. But it would just be easier if I could just focus on that 24 hours a day, if possible.
Let's make that happen. Let's make that happen. Have yourself a beautiful day. I don't know what time it is for you, but with the whole day ahead of us.
You as well. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you for stopping by. You can help us spread the word about What Are You Doing Here by sharing this episode or leaving a review in your favorite podcast app. Reviews help potential listeners see that our show is worth their time, and every single one makes a difference. For a deeper look at what the Emerging World Project is up to, head on over to emergingworldproject.org.